to listen to the Left Traffic Podcast.
What is up, Lap Traffic Nation? Welcome to episode 86 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Brandon Crowd. Woo! What a weekend, let me tell you. This is the wrap-up show from another great weekend out at MIS. Just an incredible time. And it's always extra special when your driver wins. No hidden secret that I was pumped about that one. I was there when he won August of 2010 and have been there for all 6 second place finishes. And so this weekend was extra awesome. I loved it. I was happy from the fan perspective in me. I promise I am not going to homer out too much. We'll talk about it like usual, but I will not stray and just talk Kevin Harvick. Fear not. No worries there. Back home. Back to work and all that good stuff. The studio and the man caves put back together. I believe that's the last time I plan on having to pack all this up this year. So everything can stay put. MIS cannot thank those guys enough out there for letting me come out record. If you missed the Friday show, I highly, highly encourage you to go back and check that out. Check out some great interviews that aren't outdated by any means because it's some future questions and all that kind of stuff. Ben Rhodes and Myatt Snyder were on at the same time, which was cool. Ben Rhodes was definitely hazing Myatt Snyder a little bit for being the rookie in the Thor Motorsports camp there, which is a lot of fun. Grant Enfinger was also on. Ryan Ellis and Matt DiBenedetto. And, of course, the Orange Cone kicked things off and crashed the party early. And there's even a few-minute interview where I actually grid-walked Michael Waltrip in the truck garage, which was a lot of fun. So definitely go check out the Friday show if you haven't already. Of course, had a blast hanging out with Brad and Chloe Yunker. And of course, my pseudo PR rep for the weekend, NASCAR by marriage, my wife, had a blast as always. Had a great time at the tweet up, got to meet some new faces, see some faces that weren't able to make it to the June race, like Kathleen, KHI fan on Twitter, who just got done, actually just recently retired. So congratulations. So, all right. I'm a little winded there from all that excitement, let me tell you. All right, today's show, Jeff Striegel from MRN Radio will be on in just a couple minutes to talk about some general NASCAR stuff, and he's going to stick around and talk this past weekend's races at MIS, talk the truck race, a little discussion on the Xfinity in Mid-Ohio. I'll be honest, I only saw about the last 20 laps of that. Cover the cup at MIS, the usual social media shout outs, the contest. Aaron will be on to talk about weather this weekend at Bristol. Lucky dog, lap down. It's a full show as always. That said, let's get rolling. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, joining me on the line, making his second appearance on the Lap Traffic Podcast. He's one of the voices from MRN Radio and Michigan native Jeff Striegel. Jeff, welcome back to the show. How's it going?
It's good to be back, Brandon, and I am doing very well.
Excellent. Glad to have you back, and it was great to shake your hand and meet you face-to-face over this weekend up top of the big grandstands there at MIS.
Yeah, likewise. All leading up to what turned out to be a very good weekend. I think you would agree. It's crazy. We were talking about it, that we did the triple without rain.
Yes.
And by that, I mean we started out at Pocono, no rain, went to Watkins Glen, no rain, and moved down to Michigan. And other than the rain that we had overnight on Saturday, no rain there either. And I don't know, we don't keep track, but I don't think we've done that recently. So we got to feel blessed about being able to pull those three races off. Beautiful conditions everywhere we went, including Sunday at Michigan.
Oh, it was absolutely beautiful out there. The storms, it's funny you mentioned the storms that came through were pretty intense, but it didn't affect any racing, which is all we can ask for.
Exactly.
So let's start off. This was Michigan's 50th anniversary. It's my home track. It's your home track. Did you get to go and check out the 50th anniversary tents that they had out there and see some of the older IROC cars and some of the display setups that they had for that?
I did. When I was there in June, I was fortunate enough to ask me to host a 50th anniversary dinner and live auction and all kinds of things that they had going on in June. So I had a real close-up opportunity to spend some time there at that point, and I was blown away, totally impressed. They really did a phenomenal job. And then, of course, they had it on display again this past weekend for everybody that was there then. And again, it's just cool, isn't it, to go back in and, you know, for you and I, maybe that was the first time we'd ever been to a racetrack, and to be able to see the cars that were there and on display, it takes you back to when, well, we were a whole lot younger than what we are now, and just kind of relive for a minute. And, you know, I think the highlight there was they had the GFS Marketplace 400 glass trophy on display. And back in 04, 5, 6, and 7, I headed that program up for Gordon Food Service and designed that trophy.
No kidding.
So to see that sitting there, yeah, and to see that sitting there really kind of took me back to a very special time when we were the title sponsor for the Cup Series and all the wonderful things that went on during that period of time. So, yes, I was there, and yes, I loved it. I thought they did a great job.
I couldn't agree more. It's funny you say that. We both have some ties to Gordon Food Service. So my aunt and uncle, growing up as a kid, owned a catering company, and me and another friend of the family who worked with the catering company, him and I also worked at Gordon's Food Service for a few years, which helped my uncle out because he used the store we worked at to get all the, you know, the food ordered and all that kind of stuff. So we were like his special Gordon Food Service in-store reps that put his orders together and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I worked for GFS for a couple years myself.
Perfect. I was there for 21 years up until I retired from there a year and a half ago, and now devote full-time or 100% of my time to the Motor Racing Network.
That's awesome. That's so funny. Full circle. Everyone's only separated by six people, right?
There you go. Exactly.
That's awesome. All right. So season dominated by three drivers sprinkled in with two first-time winners. What's that say about the season so far?
That we've got three very good teams and we've got everybody else. I mean, I don't really know how to put it any differently than that. You know, I keep waiting to have the opportunity to talk about the fourth driver, the fifth driver, the sixth driver. And I know here shortly we're going to be talking about 16 drivers that are going to be racing for a championship. But I don't know how else to put it. You know, when you take a look at the big three, Harvick, Busch, and Truex, There just seems to be such a gap between those three teams and everybody else. And I come away with a lot of questions like, if Kyle Busch is that good, why isn't Denny Hamlin or Eric Jones or Daniel Suarez? And granted, they've been good, but they're not at that level. We all understand that. We all get that. We see it every week.
Yeah.
If Kevin Harvick is that good, then why isn't Kurt Busch, Clint Boyer, and Eric Almirola? They're good too, but they're not Kevin Harvick good.
Right.
And, you know, I think we understand that Truex has got the alliance with Joe Gibbs, so, you know, there is something maybe that can be said there, but I just see such a gap, obviously, between our big three and everybody else. And you just keep going to the track thinking, okay, today's the day. Today's the day that Chevy is going to break through. Today's the day, and I'm talking about all of the Chevy teams, anybody, pick one.
Yep.
Kyle Larson, Jimmy Johnson, Chase Elliott. Or you go to the track and you think, okay, today's the day that Denny Hamlin is going to break through, or Brad Keselowski or Joey Logano. But every time we pack up and head home, that story hasn't changed any. It's still the big three, and until such point that somebody can get up there and win consistently, it's going to be the big three all the way to Miami.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. You know, and it's, you know, and when we talk about Chevy, you know, Chase got his win, which is incredible for the sport. And I want to get your thoughts on that a little bit later. But and I'm not, and I don't want anyone to take this the wrong way. They got their win at a road course, which, not to say Watkins Glen doesn't have a lot of speed, but it's not an oval. And I think Chevy needs to win on an oval to at least be brought back up into the conversation.
I agree with you 100%. And we can talk about what that win meant for the sport, like you said, later on. But I do want to make sure that we're clear. We're not taking anything away from the tremendous drive that Chase had at Watkins Glen. He showed incredible talent.
Absolutely.
He would not have been somebody that I would have picked. He wouldn't have been on my fantasy team.
Nope.
And yet he went out there and showed everybody, if you didn't pick me, you made a mistake because I'm capable. And now we believe it. We saw it firsthand. He didn't back into the win. It wasn't a fuel mileage race. He didn't use strategy. He used skill. He used aggressive driving. And it showed up from the time we dropped the green flag right up until we threw the checker. The way that he went about his business, racing with Kyle Busch, just showed me the kind of talent that we all know that he has. But just in case you forgot, all you had to do was watch him on that day. But to your point, it was not on a 1.5 mile racetrack at Kansas. It wasn't on a 2 mile oval at Michigan. It wasn't on a 1 mile track at Dover. It came on a different track that we only go to twice a year, similar in nature, right, to when we go to Talladega and Daytona.
Absolutely.
You know, we may see a Chevrolet win when we get to Talladega, but that still doesn't give Chevy that statement race that we all need to see, that they need to see when it comes on a 1 mile, 1.5 mile, 2 mile racetrack.
No, I'm with you. You know, and I went on about a 15-minute rant a couple weeks ago last week when Chase won, on just how important it was on all those points you just said, that it wasn't a fuel mileage and all that, that he went out there and held off one of the big three mistake free. And that was important for him. Not that, you know, a win's a win no matter what. It's in the record books, right? But just to solidify how good he is, he needed to win that race in that fashion to eliminate any doubt or any naysayers, or to say, oh, there should be an asterisk next to his name for that. None of that exists because of the way he went out there and won that race.
No asterisk. Absolutely right. None at all. Nothing but high praise and congratulations to him, his team, everybody involved in that, because you're right. There was plenty of opportunities when you race at the Glen to throw a race away. And, I mean, go back to that last lap going into turn number one. I thought Dave Moody had maybe the greatest radio turn call of all time.
I heard that, yes.
Yeah, I mean, yep. You know, Moody is capable of knocking him out of the park on any lap, on any given race. But on that day, at that moment, and, you know, and I don't know that the listeners can always – grasp this, but when I made the call going into one, you know, Chase Elliott, white flag, Chase Elliott leads the field back to one. All right, you know, Dave is ready just simply to call him up through the S's and on his way. But all of a sudden, you've got a driver that has just taken, who's going through his first ever win, just drove it off the course.
Yep.
And is about to throw this thing away, and yet Dave doesn't miss a beat. And not only does he not miss a beat, what he delivers is, in my opinion, certainly is one of the great turn position calls of all time. He had everybody, I think, listening to the radio, whether they were driving up and down the road or sitting in the backyard, just all of a sudden you just all inhale and wait to hear what's going to happen next before they could exhale.
Absolutely.
And fortunately, yep, for Chase, he held his composure. He did what he needed to do. He didn't panic, and he held him off and went on and scored the win over Truett.
Yeah. Oh, it was. Get goosebumps just reliving that right now.
That was awesome.
It was so cool. All right. So let's look back to where we are now at this point last year, 2017. We were all talking about Martin Truex Jr.'s dominating season. At this point last year, he had 15 stage wins, 4 race wins, and 35 playoff points, and was blowing the field away. To date, now 2018, Kevin Harvick, 7 wins, 6 counting towards playoffs, 12 stage wins, and 40 playoff points. Kyle Busch, 5 stage wins, 6 race wins, 35 playoff points, mirroring Martin Truex Jr.'s 35 at this point last year. What does it say that not only are just is one guy blowing the field away, but 3 guys are up there mirroring a fantastic season that we didn't think was going to maybe be replicated in 2018?
Agree. And I think what we have now is, and I realize this is a bit of a stretch, but how big of a stretch is it really? What's the fourth driver that's going to race those 3 for a championship when we get to Miami? Because barring something unforeseen, we know 3 drivers that are going to be of the 4 that make up the championship 4.
I'm with you.
It would take a colossal, it's going to take a colossal meltdown by one of those 3 drivers, and it can happen. We know that. I mean, we go back a couple of years ago, and it looked like Truex and Brad, I think it was 2 years ago, right? Truex
yes.
and Brad. Now, granted, the schedule has changed, but both of those guys lose an engine at Talladega.
Yep.
And 2 guys that we thought were going to be racing for a championship, all of a sudden, in a cloud of smoke, are done.
Yep.
They're done. Forget about it. If you had them going to the championship 4, you're out, because they were out.
Yep.
Now, so this can happen, but again, we haven't seen any chink in the armor, if you will, for those 3. Those guys are just standing up strong. They don't show any sign of weakness. I mean, good grief. They're good. Here's the problem. They're good everywhere.
Yes.
You know, you'd like to think that you could go to a road course and back them into a corner. No, that's not the case, although Chase did get the win. You think you might be able to go to a mile racetrack? Well, forget it, because Harvick dominates the Phoenix. You think you can back them into a corner on a mile and a half racetrack? You start looking at the stats and you realize that Busch and Truex and Harvick win there all the time. There's just no weakness in these teams. So if they continue to perform anywhere near the level that they're currently at, what we're trying to do right now, Brandon, is to find out what 4th driver will compete against them when we get to Miami.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jeff, there's been a lot of talk of change in the sport, whether it's schedule, tracks. What is a change that you might like to see? You know, just some random, hey, I personally would think this could make the sport better.
Well, we probably don't have enough time for that. I look at it this way. I don't know. Here's what I always find interesting. Then I will answer your question. If we pose that same question to 100 people that are listening to us, we're probably going to get 99 different answers.
Yep.
We might get 2 that are roughly the same. There are some things that I think that we should probably look at. One of them, and I know that some of my ideas are not widely popular with the pure loyalists, people who have been in the sport, you know, as long or longer than I have, and I respect them for that opinion. But one of the things that I look at is we need to slow these cars down. And here's why. When we are running 200 miles an hour at Michigan, there is only one groove that you can run 200 miles on, one groove. And what I try to give as an example here is we're driving down, pick a highway, I-75, that's 5 lanes wide, you're in the middle lane, and you're behind somebody who is doing 1 or 2 miles an hour slower than what you are, but you cannot pass them high, and you cannot pass them low, even though there's nobody in that lane. You just cannot go there. And so what happens is you end up having to follow them. Now, that's what we have at Michigan, and I get that's kind of an archaic way of looking at it, but the fact of the matter is, if you're going to go that fast, you can only use one groove on that 5-lane wide racetrack.
Yep, I'm with you there.
The trucks ran the night before, you know, and they're running 185 miles an hour, and they can drive all over that racetrack. So if we were to slow the cars down, maybe utilizing what we saw or a variation of what we saw at the All-Star race, and we slow these cars down some, we can now move around on the racetrack and use grooves and racing lanes that we've not used before. So that would be one. I think we could probably go on and on.
Well, I want to give you, I'd like to get your opinion on what I think is something that could potentially help the sport a little bit. And one of the things that I think, they kind of go hand in hand a little bit. One, I think 16 guys making the playoffs is way too many. We're going to have 16 guys make it, and nothing short of a miracle, the casual fan is going to be able to pick the four that don't make it to the round of 12. You know, what outside right. of it just being for sponsorships to be able to say, hey, we made the playoffs, I think 16 is too many. And I also think that maybe more might be less in terms of the ratings, track attendance. I wouldn't be opposed to cutting the season down a few races and some of these mile and a halfs and 2 mile tracks that we go to twice a year. You know, let's maybe cut those out. I think some of your staples, Daytona obviously needs two races. Martinsville needs two races. Bristol, but some of these other tracks and my staple's Pocono. I'm not a fan of two Pocono races 7 weeks apart, and people could even throw Michigan in there, but I won't say that because it's our home track. But I think those are two things that might, while it's not maybe going to impact on-track performance, might create an itch and a desire to see more racing if we cut it out a little bit.
Well, I think if you're going to go there, and I don't disagree with you, I think our schedule is too long. I think we have too many races. The comment that you made about how many people are in the championship run, I mean, it's just about 50% now. I mean, obviously, it's just shy of that.
Yeah,
it's almost like hockey. You know, you play a hockey season, and then you've got about six teams that don't advance into the playoffs, and everybody else does.
Right.
Is that necessary?
Yep.
Probably not. From a rating standpoint, I don't know that 16 or 12 or 8 will make the difference like what you're talking about with shortening the schedule. Do you shorten the schedule? Do you shorten, because what you're talking about now is what would make this more appealing to the fan. And here's the thing. Are we talking about the little fan, or are we talking about the fan that we're trying to attract? And that's, I think, the big difference. It's hard to have this conversation with a loyal fan.
Sure.
Because a loyal fan says there's nothing wrong with it. I want you to go 500 miles at this track. I want you to run the Coca-Cola 600 because that's tradition.
Sure.
All right, well, that's great. But I don't know that 5-hour race at Atlanta or at Charlotte is going to appeal to somebody who is trying to become a NASCAR fan. And by trying, meaning I'm going to buy a ticket. I'm going to go sit in the grandstands. I'm going over to my buddy's house, and we're going to watch this race. So that's that fan that we're trying to attract. I think the races as a whole are too long. I think the season is too long. And I think the other thing that we really need to look at, and I know I get pushback anytime I bring it up, but I also think we need to quiet the cars down. Doesn't mean we have to slow them down. It just means we have to quiet them down. We've all been to a short track, everybody. And short track cars do not run at the same decibel level as what a cup car does or a truck. And when you're taking a family out to Michigan, as an example, for the first time, and you've got your kids with you, and you got your wife, maybe you got your friends, once we drop the green flag, that opportunity to interact with the people that you're there with,
it's gone. It's gone.
I mean, you cannot scream loud enough to ask your wife or your son if they're having a good time because they flat out can't hear.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think sometimes
the pushback is, well, what do you want, a bunch of electric tires going around here? No. But, a short track race car is running 104 decibels, give or take. We're running 140. I mean, just find a happy medium. I mean, you've been to Dover. You've been to Richmond. You've been to Martinsville, we can even use Michigan as an example. You go to Dover, Richmond, Martinsville, Bristol. It's just, in my opinion, it's too loud. But that's my opinion.
No,
some people may agree with it, some don't.
I I'm not opposed either way. I know that came out earlier in the season. There was some talk and chatter about that on Twitter. I don't remember what sparked that, but you are 100% right in terms of being in the stands. Unless you shell out the big bucks for a two-way headset to be able to talk to whomever you're there with, which the casual fan isn't doing that. You know, the casual fan might walk in without earplugs, which, you know, heaven forbid they make that mistake. You know, it is deafening out there. That is for sure.
And just to put a point on that, I love the fact that I see a dad and his son with the headphones on, because dad is going to show his son that he can listen in to Kevin Hurd all day long and hear that conversation. That's cool.
That's
awesome.
Yep.
Or he could listen to a radio broadcast. But it shouldn't be, the other reason shouldn't be because my son is going to leave here deaf.
Right.
I mean, that's not the reason that you need to have. In my opinion, that's not why you need to have earbuds and headphones, because our sport that we're going to watch is that loud. So I love the idea of using it for the right reason, but I hate to think that we've got to put headphones on kids and adults alike just because it's so doggone loud.
Sure.
But again, my opinion, some people like it, some people hate it.
I am with you. All right, Jeff. So before we get into some actual race talk from this weekend, tell everyone, you've got a charity, Racing Awareness. Remind everyone what that's all about and what's new with that since the last time you've been on.
Well, I appreciate that, Brandon. Thank you. RacingAwareness.com. RacingAwareness.com is the name of our organization. I have a 501c3 nonprofit charity here in Grand Rapids that raises money for Helen DeBruce Children's Hospital, one of the top 10 children's hospitals in the nation. It's located here in Grand Rapids. And so we work very hard at trying to raise money to support childhood cancer. Along with that, we own three different race cars that all carry the Helen DeBruce Children's Hospital banner on it. No, they are not a sponsor. We just put it out there so people recognize who they are and the fact that we're trying to support them. So up to, by the time we wrap up in September, we'll have our golf outing there, and we will have raised more than $400,000 as a little short track
That's awesome.
Team. We're in our ninth year right now, Brandon, and $400,000 is what we'll have raised by the time we're done with the golf outing in September. We've got three cars that run at Berlin, so yes, I understand what 104 decibel sounds like, because that's the rule that we have, and they still sound like race cars. We've got a couple of super lates that we run over here, and we've got a pavement modified, and we are trying to do something. It's pretty cool, and I'm gonna brag here for a minute.
By all means.
Well, the guy who runs our super late just clinched the Super League championship at Berlin. That is cool. But he becomes the first driver in 68 years of Berlin Raceway to now record a championship in four different, completely different divisions. He won a Pro Stock, you know, years ago. He drove a Super Stock. He drove our Modified and won three championships with that. We moved him up to the Super League this year, and he's won the championship there doing something. And this is home track to Bob Seneker and Tim Steele and Johnny Benson. I mean, there's a lot of history here. So he's done that, which is historic. And then if we are able to finish up by taking our three cars, and right now we're in position to do it, to win a championship in all three of those divisions, nobody else has ever done that either. So we're pretty proud of what we've accomplished.
That's incredible.
It's been a pretty phenomenal year.
That's awesome. Well, best of luck. I will definitely keep up and see how that pans out. Best of luck to you guys with that. That's incredible.
On Facebook too, Brandon. Just search Racing Awareness, and you can follow everything we're doing either on Facebook or online at racingawareness.com.
And there's actually a link to you guys on the homepage of the laptrafficpodcast.com, so you can get there as well from that too. So
thank you.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. All right. Let's get to some on-track action here, Jeff. Truck race, I'm just going to hit a couple things, and I'll get your opinion on some stuff here. Truck race for me was basically everything I expected at MIS. Second to last race before the truck playoffs. When you typically, I know a lot of people think of a good truck race, you're thinking of short track Martinsville racing. But a big wide track like MIS without the plates, which Ben Rhodes and Myatt Snyder said on the show Friday, you get to draft without having pack racing, which makes for good truck racing. I really enjoyed the truck race on Saturday.
I thought it was at least an A, maybe an A+. It was spectacular, and I was able to do something on Saturday. I don't do the truck race or the support race Xfinity, so a lot of times I will find a place either in the grandstands or a swing or something like that and just kind of camp out. Sometimes I'll go out and hang out with Moody or Bagman out in the turns and just take the race in. I did that at Michigan, and I'll tell you what, I was on the edge of my seat. I liked everything I saw about that race. And that was even before they threw the white flag. And when they dropped the white flag and Moffitt took off and went after that win and got it by a bumper, I just thought it was a great, great race.
I enjoyed that race from start to finish. There was on track.
Yeah.
You know, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, you saw guys running in multiple grooves during that truck race and not just on restarts. And that's a perspective I hadn't thought of before. And you opened my eyes there, sir. That's what I will tell you.
Well, and here's what I would just take it to. It's like, if we did that on Saturday, we ran all five grooves, we drafted, we passed. Why can't we do that on Sunday?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. I get it. All right. I got it. You know, the obvious. Okay, those are trucks and we're racing cars and that's the truck series and we race the cup series. Okay, I hear all that. But if we can do it on Saturday, I've got to have somebody a whole lot smarter than me and most of everybody in that group. Obviously, everybody in that car is smarter than me when it comes to that. But I need somebody to explain to me why we can't do that on Sunday like we do on Saturday, because that race on Saturday, if that had been Truex and Elliott and Johnson and Eric Jones doing that kind of thing, man, oh, man, we wouldn't have to worry about what's it going to take to get people to come back and sit in the stands at Michigan on a Sunday. They'd already be there.
No doubt. So. No doubt. A couple guys needed to go out and win. They tried. Todd Gilliland on the outside looking in, picked up a top five, but not the win needed. Myatt Snyder wanted to go out there and get a win and bump someone out. Tried a little different pit strategy. Finished second in stage two, but unfortunately brought it home 18th. A couple guys needed to go out there and just get some points. Sauter, Rhodes, Enfinger, Freeze, and Haley all finished in the top 10. And, man, what a finish. Battle for the last 12 laps at Michigan. Sauter takes the lead on lap 188. Moffitt was on his tail the entire time. Sauter, a little better in turns 1 and 2, would get about a 5 to 6 car length, truck length lead. Moffitt would close in 3 and 4, and we watched this for 10 laps. I had moved down into the pits for the last 3, so I didn't see them coming out of 4, but I just saw them on the front stretch. Moffitt goes below Sauter right as they cross the start finish. Fourth win of the season for a small team and his second win at MIS. Brett's been on the show a couple times. I've really got a love for that team. Just getting to talk to him a little bit more, I was ecstatic for him.
Yeah, he's a kid that continues to show talent. I kind of look at Brett Moffitt the same way that I looked at Alex Bowman years ago. Alex Bowman, in my opinion, way, way back had the best talent in a small team. And it was like, when is somebody going to tap this kid on the shoulder and put him in a car or a truck, back then talking about Alex,
sure,
where he can now take his talent and take it to victory lane. Now, obviously we know he lived that out. There were times when it looked like he was going to be out of the sport. Now he's driving the 88. And I see Moffitt in those same steps, those same footsteps, all the talent in the world, and showcasing it with a smaller team, like you pointed out, and obviously a team that's capable of winning. And he did that. And I'll tell you something else. When he got in behind Sauter, you know, how many people out there were like, okay, you're behind Sauter. There's no way you're going to get by Johnny. I mean, he's too good. Yep. He's too kenji. He's been here before. He's seen it. He's done it. And he's held people off. And I'm like, all right, I know he's there, but Sauter will figure out a way to keep him behind him. And like you said, he did all the way up until they worked off turn four, and Moffitt was able to get a Thunder alongside. And once he did that, he was able to close it out and take the victory.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I it was awesome. So interesting stat on Brett Moffitt for 2018, Jeff. Through 15 races, we all know he's got four wins. Now, here's the interesting stat. He's got eight top tens, but those eight top tens are also eight top fives. So really, it's been top five or bust for Brett Moffitt, which is why there's the point differential between him and Sauter with each four wins. Sauter's leading, Moffitt's in fifth. If Moffitt is not in the top five, his average finishing spot is 19th. So hopefully these guys can dial in consistency through the playoffs and go out there and have that type of race with Johnny Sauter and Homestead.
How many times have we used that word before? Consistency.
Yep.
You know, you're good one week and you're not good the next, and you're good one week and then you're off 2 weeks. And even though you, when you're good, you're championship good. But when you're not good, you're not even, you know, championship round of 12 or 16, depending on what series we're talking about.
Yep.
So if they can, to your point, if they can work on that consistency, both him as a young driver, his team as a smaller team, if they can get that consistency right, they might just be a championship before this season is over.
Absolutely. Right now, basically, the truck playoff field is set unless someone outside the top eight gets a win this weekend at Bristol. If that doesn't happen, it's Sauter, Gregson, Enfinger, Friesen, Moffitt, Crafton, Haley, and Rhodes. Jeff, could you see someone playing spoiler outside the top eight at Bristol?
No,
I mean, that's my answer too. Yeah. So I'm with you.
No, you know, you asked me a question, I got to give you an answer. Yeah. No, how's that?
I'm with you. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, truck race Thursday night. I'm excited for some weekday truck racing. I'm excited about that. Jeff, let's real quick Xfinity race here. So by the time I got out of the truck race, my group was, we were all pretty hungry, so we went to an awesome pizza place in Jackson called Clavon's and catch the last 20 laps or so for the Xfinity race. Justin Allgaier picks up his third win on the season. Justin is on the brink of having his best season in the Xfinity series. This win, making it his best winning season and closing in not only on wins, but most top fives. 2016, he had 13 top fives, and he's closing right in on that. Allgaier having a stellar season in the Xfinity series.
I might draw a comparison to Allgaier as I might with Sauter. When Johnny Sauter, I think, figured out that he was going to be a truck series driver. And I mean, everybody has that vision of driving for Rick Hendrick.
Sure.
But when that doesn't happen and you recognize where you fit and where you belong in this sport and you become comfortable with your surroundings, Johnny Sauter, you just become dominant. You just win and win. And, you know, yep, you're the veteran. And I kind of look at that as where Johnny is right now. I think he is comfortable with where he's at, and he's a champion. I mean, let's face it. And he's in the truck series. He's as good as there is. Yep. Nobody better.
Yeah.
Week in and week out.
Yep.
And do we feel like the same thing is maybe happening right now with Justin Allgaier, that he's been with the team now for more than a couple of years? He's with a very good team. I think he's comfortable where he's at. And now it's a matter of going out and performing for that team and performing for himself. In other words, maybe I'm not out there like I'm trying to showcase my talent in order to end up over here or end up over there. He's with a very good team. We all know that. And he's a very good driver. We all know that. And when all that stuff comes together, you start seeing seasons like Justin is putting together right now and like Johnny has put together year after year, you know, with what he's been doing. So, you know, when you've got a good team, and you got a good driver, like in Justin's case, and you're all working together for the same common goal, then good things happen. And that's what's happening for that 7 team right now.
Absolutely. Some solid finishes. Rookie Austin Cindric brought it home second. Matt Tift, who's had a couple rough weeks at Iowa, finished 26th. Watkins Glen finished 27th, was able to bring it home fourth. Ryan Truex, with his best finish on the season, picked up his first top five. And Jeff, I want to get your take. Elliott Sadler, can you believe it has been since Kentucky 2016, since Sadler's last win, with 7 second-place finishes and 25 top fives in his 60-race winless streak? We talk about consistency, but consistency is almost being a letdown for him right now.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. You know, everybody loves Elliott Sadler. Everybody. Yeah. I don't know of anybody that doesn't love Elliott Sadler. We want him to win a championship, obviously. He doesn't have many more years to compete, meaning that at some point he's going to say, guys and gals, it's time for me to step aside and do something different. And so we want that championship for him. We want him to win races. We see him at the front of the field time and time again, race after race, and he's in position to win. He's in position. How many times? I mean, you talk about how many second place wins he's for runner-up finishes he has. How many times has he been in position to win a championship, only to see it wadded up in turn number three, like at Phoenix, a few years back?
Yep.
That guy has always been so close to achieving the goals that he would be setting, you know, when he rolls into Daytona in February. Here are my goals. And he's always right there, but just shy.
Yep.
I mean, everybody's, even if you're an Allgaier fan, or you're a Cindric fan, or you're a Cole Custer fan, when Elliott's out front, you kind of want to see him close the deal and get that championship and get what he feels like and we all feel like he deserves. And hopefully this year will be that year. But like you said, you know, if you put yourself in position long enough,
eventually,
sooner or later, good
absolutely
things are going to happen.
Absolutely.
And that's what Elliott's trying to do now.
Yep. Justin's win helped keep it close in what has been a one-horse race as far as standings and playoff points go in the Xfinity Series with rookie Christopher Bell. Bell with 24 playoff points, followed now by Allgaier with 14. Obviously expect those two to get to the round of 8 and very likely the championship 4. Question is, who will be the other two that join them? 5 races to go in the Xfinity Series before the playoffs. Bristol, Road America, Darlington, Indy, Vegas. Playoffs could get a little interesting here in the Xfinity Series. Another Friday night race in the Xfinity Series this week at Bristol. Looking very forward to that. Jeff, let's get over to the big dance on Sunday, the Cup race. Kevin Harvick, Stage 1, Stage 2, and picks up his 7th win. For me, Jeff, this was a little bit more of an interesting race at MIS for the mere fact we had 8 cautions. Granted, 2 of those were for stage breaks, but 6 cautions, little higher caution flags, more caution flags flew at Michigan than we're used to seeing.
Well, I think the record is 10, and we put 8 up. And like you said, you know, 2 of them were stage breaks, but yeah, it was funny because I was talking in a suite prior to the race, and I was explaining what a fuel mileage race might look like and said, don't be surprised if we don't see that. I don't anticipate that we're going to see the caution flag other than maybe once or twice besides stage breaks. We're going to race them pretty clean here. And then lo and behold, like normal, I'm 100% wrong. And, you know, the caution flag is coming out. So yeah, I was surprised about it. You know, I don't mind seeing a caution flag every now and again to bunch the field back up, keep Kevin Harvick from lapping the field, Bruce or Truex. In this particular case, it happened to be Kevin. But I also don't like to see a caution flag when, you know, when Ty Dillon runs over a battery. Fortunately, that was not any worse than what it was. But, you know, caution flags are good as long as, you know, I guess as long as it doesn't take out your favorite driver.
Sure.
And obviously we don't hurt anybody. But unfortunately for this weekend, we didn't do that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. The big three ran 1-2-3 for a while. But I got to ask, what did you think of Truex's, or not Truex, Cole Pearn's strategy to try to run 60 laps and make it to the end of the stage, falling short, having to pit when pit road was closed, and picking up a pit road penalty on top of that, but still being able to salvage a 14th place finish.
I was surprised. I said it on the radio that that I was surprised that they were pulling that strategy, considering that they were all running right together. I didn't feel like or see a need to do something different than what Kyle and Kevin and the rest of the top five and top 10 were doing. I expected to see that from a Ricky Stenhouse, you know, trying to figure out a way to strategize his way to victory lane in order to get into the playoffs, something like that. So I was absolutely surprised. And usually when something like this happens, and if I make a comment like, you know, I'm not really sure that that was the right move, that car ultimately ends up in victory lane, proving that they're a whole lot smarter than the commentators. But it definitely caught me by surprise. I was like, I'm just, because I'm doing the fuel calculations, and it's like, we know he can't go. Alex Hayden, I think, had Truex, I believe, I'm not sure. And they made, I guess it was Woody Kane, because he pitted right on the entrance into the pit road. And so during the commercial break, you know, we made the comment, go down, find out what are they saying, because the way that we've got it added up, he can't make it to the end of the stage. So sure enough, he goes down there and reports back that they feel like they are a lap and a half shy. All right, well, they were exactly right.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
even though he got off the throttle. And, yeah, I mean, they were right. He tried to save fuel, gave up several spots on the racetrack trying to save fuel, and then ultimately had to give it up and come to pit road. And I was just like, man, that just had me scratching my head.
You know, I
knowing
wonder
that they probably felt like they had enough speed to be able to drive back up to the front.
Sure.
But they were already at the front, and they could have stayed there if they would have pitted. But again, I'm not going to second guess Cole.
Sure.
Because he's got a championship trophy on his shelf. And
I'm with you. A couple interesting facts here. Keselowski picks up his second place at MIS in his career. I'm still shocked by the number of races he has won that he has yet, and the success of Penske at MIS. Joey with a couple wins that Brad has yet to win at his home track.
We never even talked about Brad until we got down to maybe 40 to go.
Yep. Yeah.
And then it was like, all of a sudden, here he comes. And, you know, we're watching, you know, speeds, you know, every time they cross the line, I can see obviously how quickly they might be running compared to Harvick. And even though he was the second quickest car on the racetrack, it was very clear that he was not as quick as Kevin, and that may be, barring a late caution and an opportunity to reline them all up and just go head to head for, you know, last 2, 3, 5, 10 laps, whatever. I kind of felt like that was where he was going to stall out. But, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit, because I didn't see the speed in that car all weekend, but they certainly found something over the middle portion of that race that really set that Ford on fire, and he was coming to the front. And I hate it for Brad, because I really, truly do want to see the celebration that Brad will do at Michigan if he can finally get that win. He's made it very clear that his resume is not complete until he wins at his home track.
Yep.
And he said it would be the biggest win of his career if he could pull that off. And for those reasons, I want to see it happen, because I want to see him tear the place down after he gets a checkered flag, but it didn't come on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because I had Eric Jones on a couple weeks ago after his Daytona win, and I asked him if him and Brad have a little side wager going on who gets that first win at MIS, and he laughed and he said they actually have never talked about that. And I said, well, if some miracle happens where the three of us are passing each other in the garage at the same point in time at MIS in a couple weeks, I'm going to ask them that. And of course, that never happened. But Eric Jones spun twice, still brought it home 13th. So, yeah, those two guys, it'll be fun to watch them battle that out for the first win there. We talked about Chevy earlier and needing speed at, you know, the cookie-cutter tracks, if you will. If I had to guess who would have been the best finishing Chevy, I don't know Austin Dillon would have even sparked and cracked my mind there. Austin Dillon finishes fourth. And the guy who, if I had to pick a Chevy, Kyle Larson, he's had two struggling races at MIS this year after winning three in a row there.
I agree with you. The whole Austin Dillon thing really, really caught me by surprise. We recognized early into the weekend that they were going to be good. Now, coming in to the weekend, I didn't have that planned out in my mind. But after we saw all the cars practice on Friday, and then when they qualified, I believe it was 5-6, Austin and Ryan together qualifying fifth and sixth quick, it was like, all right, we can't overlook this. There's a reason that both of these two cars are running that fast, so you better not overlook them. And I thought Ryan ran a pretty good race. I know we're not talking about him, but I thought he ran a very fast race early on, then he faded. And then, kind of like Brad, towards the middle stages of the race, it's like the fastest car on the racetrack, driving by everybody, is the three of Austin Dillon. Yeah. And it's like, holy cow.
Right? Like, did we just say that?
Good for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because other than the Daytona 500 win, you know, you've got a couple of top tens, maybe three. I don't know. You probably got the stats there in front of you. But it has not been a championship-winning season for the three car or for the 31, that matter.
Well, I mean, they're
They found something.
Dillon's going to knock someone out of the standings, so. Let's talk back to Chase Elliott here for a minute. He was a lap down at one point in this race, battled back for a top 10 finish. This is where I wanted to get your take a little bit more on the win last week at Watkins Glen, and to where I think this was really a passing of the torch once Chevy's able to dial back the speed in. I mentioned it last week on the show. Chase Elliott is the guy that got HMS, the 250th win, which is a huge milestone. It was not Gordon. It was not Johnson. It was not Junior. I think that is monumental for Chase Elliott right there.
I think it is, too, because I think it is realistically now, and nobody's got the crystal ball. I get it. But I think that it is a perfect setting for Chase to begin the rest of his career as a future Cup Series champion, a multi-time winner. You know, I'm going to stop short of going a Hall of Fame driver because that, you know, when you start talking about that, you're talking about rare air.
Sure.
And let's not go that far yet. But I just think that it was cool that if you're going to look at milestones, and that being win number 250, and it was Chase's first, I think that together they're going to accomplish great things. I thought maybe by now they would have accomplished a little more, you know, as far as wins are concerned. Everybody did.
Sure.
But, you know, at the same time, this is still a young race car driver. And everybody expected that, you know, Chase Elliott, he's going to win races. He's going to win championships by the time he's into his fourth and fifth year. Well, why should we think that? Why would anybody feel like they should put that kind of pressure on a young kid who is trying to build his career? You know, and I always think that's unfair when we talk about this is the next Jeff Gordon or this is the next Jimmy Johnson. No, what we're seeing right now is this is a kid by the name of Chase Elliott, and he's growing in our sport. He's learning. He's obviously incredibly popular, and for those reasons, I love that.
Yep.
But I also think that we need to allow these drivers to grow and learn and understand what this sport's all about. I mean, you can go back. I think the best example to compare that to is Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch did not win 25 races in his first 2 years in the Cup Series. He made people mad. He wrecked race cars. He learned. He understood how to run 36 races a year and how to be around at the end. And when he finally figured it out, you can't stop the guy.
Absolutely.
And I think we're going to see the same type of thing with Chase Elliott as we continue to watch this young man grow in our sport.
I'm with you 100%. All right. The end of the race, race and pit strategy payoff. Harvick leading the race, knowing everyone was going to have to come down a pit. When pit window opened, leaders all stayed out. Of the leaders, Kyle Busch was the first to pit. Harvick followed the following lap. Harvick comes out able to get past Busch and racing Austin Dillon for 13th place, which eventually became the lead once everyone else pitted. The race stayed green. Kevin Harvick picks up win number 7. I went home happy. Harvick now tied with Bill Elliott on the all-time win list for 44 wins there, sir. What's your closing thoughts on the race itself?
I thought it was good. You know, for Michigan, I thought it was better than expected from me. And I love Michigan and love everybody, their staff and everybody over there. But, you know, Michigan is not Martinsville. So you got to have that expectation going in. And so for those reasons, I say it was a very good race. It had some drama. Obviously, we recognized who the fastest car was shortly into that race, and he just never let off the throttle and dominated the race. But other than that, I think it had everything that we were all looking for, and for those reasons, I thought it was a very good race.
Absolutely. I'm with you. All right. Over to the standings. 17 of the 23 races won by the big three. And we talk about the big three, but it could be the big two. Truex fading, and I say only in quotation marks, only has 27 playoff points compared to Kyle Busch at 35 and Kevin Harvick in 40. Jeff, you mentioned it at the start to assume, and it's a safe assumption if we're looking at things on pen and paper, that those guys are going to be at Homestead. So I'll put you on the spot now. Who is the lone wolf that gets that fourth and final spot if you had to pick right now?
Don't know. Don't have a clue. I think I could give you there's too many of them that fall in the number four bucket. Here's why I say that. Okay. Yep, you could put Kyle Larson in there. I wouldn't argue it.
Yep.
You could put Brad. You could put Joey in there. I wouldn't argue it. You could put Clint Boyer, Chase Elliott. I wouldn't argue it. But the problem is that bucket is so full of number fours that all you're going to do, I'd be fine with just you load them all up. I'll pull a number, and whatever number I get for the number four, I'd be satisfied with.
It's those
That's
three and
I'm
everybody
looking
else.
At, so.
Yep. No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And I'll tell you something else, Brandon, but before you go and say it's the big two, make sure you remember how many mile and a half racetracks are in that final 10 races to crown a championship. And last time I checked, Mr. Mile and a Half drives the number 78.
No, I'm with you there.
I'm with you. It's only going to get better before it gets over, I can tell you that.
Yes. All right, Lab Traffic Nation. Three races to go before the playoff field is set. Bristol, Darlington, which I will be at, and Indianapolis. It's the famous Bristol Night Race this weekend. It is also the world-famous Woodward Dream Cruise, which used to be MIS weekend, and I've been very, very happy the last few years. It has fallen the week after MIS, so now I get to go to both. Jeff, have you ever made it out to the Woodward Dream Cruise?
I have not. I've heard about it. Rusty was in last year. I think they inducted him into the Team Penske Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. And,
yep.
And Roger and everybody was out there. And, of course, he came back with so many amazing stories. I've heard the stories from the guys and gals over at Michigan International Speedway. It's something I think that needs to be on the bucket list before it's all said and done. I would love to get over there, but I never have.
Well, I tell you what, open invite. If the off week ever lines up with Woodward Dream Cruise, I'm a mile away from it. I will be happy to host and
Perfect.
Take you around, man.
Perfect. All we need is a legitimate Ford Cobra to run up and down the streets with. If you can pull that off, I'm there.
I'll see what I can do. Jeff, tell everyone where they can follow you at on social media and the charity website again.
Well, the charity website is racingawareness.com, or on Facebook, just search Racing Awareness. On Twitter, it's just Jeff Striegel. And look ahead and follow. Usually trying to have a little bit of fun with my Twitter, along with also throwing out maybe thought-provoking topics as well, kind of like what we've been doing here today. So I'd love to have a follow, and we'll see everybody. You know, we got a weekend off. I don't know if you realize that, Brandon. So
yes.
I'm going to be just sitting here in front of the TV watching Bristol, and I can't wait to see how that unfolds before we go off to Road America. And then it's on again in Darlington, right around the corner.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, big thanks. Jeff, man, I had a lot of fun getting in-depth here a little bit. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. It was great seeing you this weekend at MIS. Have a great rest of the season, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
Absolutely, anytime, Brandon. I always enjoy being on with you, and I appreciate everything that you do for our sport, too. Yeah. Sometimes that gets lost, and you know, we need more people as passionate about the sport as what you are, and so for that, I applaud you. And absolutely, I'll see you down the road for sure.
Excellent. Thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you.
You bet. Take care.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. That was so much fun, just talking racing with someone very knowledgeable in the sport and someone I enjoy listening to when I've got the radio on, Jeff Striegel from the MRN broadcast. Just so much fun. So grateful to be able to do that with him. A lot of fun. All right. Let's get to some social media. Show's going a little long today. Everyone, make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, @LapTrafficPC. Make sure you're subscribing, downloading on iTunes, Blueberry, Acast, Listen Notes, Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean. It's out there. Don't forget about the giveaway, the autographed Richard Childress Racing 124 diecast to commemorate the RCR Museum. And a Lap Traffic t-shirt once the Twitter @LapTrafficPC hits 3,500 followers. Some shout outs to some new followers. Matt @MattCBSaint from Illinois, a big fan of Rowdy Nation. Hillary @Hillary0110 from Wisconsin, big racing fan and a photographer. Evan @EJC8814, big fan of Ryan Blaney. Liam @DChick14, who is an intern at Go Fast Racing. Ron @HobbledyGaga from Hershey Shores, or Jersey Shore, sorry, and is also a Matt Benedetto fan. Austin @RipsMS, huge NASCAR and NHRA fan. Guys, welcome to the show. Huge thanks to everyone that came out to the tweet up on Sunday. Got to see Kathleen, Kenny, Zach, Aaron Bearden was there, Bob Pockris, and everyone else that came out. I got a ton of pictures from this weekend. Bunch of koozie pictures, ran into some guys walking around, all with beer and no koozies. So I took care of that problem very quickly. And I got a bunch of pictures up on the website already at the Lap Traffic Podcast. I tweeted a bunch out. So go check those out on the website. I've got stickers and koozies still. If you guys want some, make sure you hit up the website, fill out the contact page, and I will send them out to you. And now it's time for some weather with the wonderful Mr. Aaron Studwell, who brought some great weather at MIS this weekend. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, back again. You can follow him on Twitter @RaceWeather, and you can check out the website raceweather.net. He is deserving of a huge round of applause for delivering some fantastic weather this past weekend at MIS. The wonderful Mr. Aaron Studwell, good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm awesome. So, funny story about this past weekend. Saturday, after the truck race cleared out, went to dinner, and we actually drove to this awesome pizza place in Jackson called Clavon's. And we were out there, had a great time. We come back to the Airbnb, and I messaged them because they're like, hey, when you guys get back, because we got back early, they're like, oh, we'll take you out on the pontoon boat. Cool. Well, I text them, hey, we're on our way back. They're like, okay, we're clear. We're drying the boat off from the monsoon. Apparently, about 20 minutes after the track or after the race ended, like they told me there was like a hailstorm. They couldn't even see out into the water. It was just a sheet of white hail that came through Saturday after the truck race.
Jeez.
And then Sunday after the cup race, we're driving up US 12 and just drove into this massive storm that it probably took us an extra 20 minutes to get home because of that storm and people just not being able to drive.
Yeah. Specifically for that Sunday storm, we were watching them. They were luckily placed a little bit further east, and you know, definitely that drive home was going to be a bit more, treacherous, but you were delayed leaving the track because why?
Oh, well, no big deal. Just my driver won. No big deal. Yeah, I'm trying not to homer out too much on tonight's show. So I Laugh Traffic Nation could let me know if I did an objective job or not.
Well, there's objective jobs, but there's also enjoying your job.
Absolutely.
Which you definitely did.
Absolutely.
So that's good answer.
So real quick, big props to anyone that didn't check out the Friday bonus show, which, again, I highly encourage you to do. Aaron popped on for a few minutes to give an update, which was your first dual weekly appearance. So thank you very much for that.
There was that, and that was also the unique perspective of using FaceTime to do that. So we added to our technology repertoire.
Yes, yes. Got to wave hi to everybody, the clan that was with me. So it's a good time. All right, so this week we are headed to Bristol for three night races, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, hopefully. How's the outlook looking this weekend?
We will start on Thursday. It's really kind of the best day. Partly clear skies for race time, upper 70s. Kind of a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. That will extend into the early evening hours, but it definitely clears out. So we could be dealing with some wet track going into the start of the race. But as we get into race time, I think we're going to be good to go for the truck race.
Well, that could make things interesting if it rains at all Thursday, because it's a single day event for the trucks with practice, qualifying, and the race. So if those guys don't get much track time, that could make for a very interesting truck race.
Yeah, and then we have to look at the entry list to see if there's any first-time drivers there or first-time truck series drivers on Bristol, at least.
Yep.
Then for the Food City 300, so that is Friday night, cloudy skies. Again, a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms, but again, looking for that to clear out by race time. Temperatures at race time in the mid-70s.
Perfect.
Yeah, it really is looking like a very nice August weekend there. We're not going to be dealing with any brutal heat. Again, on Saturday, highs in the low 80s. Race time temperatures mid-70s, mostly cloudy skies, chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Now, this is where it gets a bit dicey, because we do see a chance of them lasting into the evening hours. That being said, we do have lights. By definition, it is the Bass Pro Shops NRA night race, which I'm hoping fits on the website. but they'll be patient. We'll watch. The models are very split right now as to both timing and coverage. So I'm going to be fairly optimistic and say they are going to race on Saturday night. Hopefully they'll finish on Saturday night and it won't be a repeat of earlier this year where they had to finish on a separate on a Monday.
Yep, yep.
And I really think that, the way the models are trending, they're trending a little drier, and we'll just be optimistic and hope we have three great nights of racing.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
With minimal interruptions. Oh, I am too.
Yes.
I am too. There's a place that's definitely shortlisted. I've been there for a spring race, but not a summer race.
Not the summer.
So
yes.
That's so many positive things to hear about that.
Yeah, no, that's on my bucket list as well. So no race next week. So open invitation if you want to come on for a few minutes and just talk about Bristol.
I think we can talk about Bristol. We can talk about, we can talk about the weather. We can talk about the how the racing was, and we'll definitely look ahead to everything else going on in the world.
We can give an extra early preview to my trip to Darlington with the PETM podcast.
We can try to do that. Yes, we can.
All right, everyone, make sure you're following Aaron on Twitter at RaceWeather. Check out the website raceweather.net, and sir, we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Good talking to you.
Always, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Later.
Bye. Always love being able to catch up with Aaron there. So awesome that he calls in each week for the weather, and hope the weather works out for everybody in Bristol this weekend. And I want to dial it in on Saturday night, too. So that said, it is time for some Lucky Dog and Lap Down picks. I'm going to give you mine right off the get-go here. You guys know My lucky dog of the race weekend is going to Kevin Harvick and Rodney Childers for picking up the 7th win on the season. Lap down, going to Martin Truex and Cole Pearn. You heard Jeff talk about it earlier. You know, they were already out front. Why they did that, who knows? They're definitely smarter, though, but just didn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't know what was going on there. But, all right, that said, let's get to your picks. Scott at 1985 Wagner's lucky dog, Kevin Harvick, for winning the race and going full dad mode right after. That's right. No burnout. Had Keelan in the car. I forgot to talk about that. That was such a cool moment and had to be good as you know, Kevin Harvick, you know, a figure in the sport and just showing the humbleness and going dad mode as we've seen Clint Bowyer do and Kyle Busch do. Bringing up the kids in the sport, something we haven't seen in a while are the young kids of these famous celebrity drivers who just dial it back a minute when it's important to dial it back, which was really cool. Scott's lapped down Ty Dillon, just bad luck. That was just crazy, you know, just to hit that, for NASCAR not to see that. I guess that could have been my lap down too, is NASCAR not throwing the caution flag, because there was definitely chatter all over the radios about there being debris on the track, you know. So the one time there's legit debris, we don't get a caution. But then we'll see the cigarette butt that brings it out sometime. So, you know, it is what it is. Captain Redneck at Redneck _ Captain's lucky dog, Keelan Harvick, for the ride of his life. Absolutely. Lap down. NASCAR not throwing a debris caution before Ty hit whatever it was he hit. Mick at GoDucks 42 _ Mick, lucky dog, Austin Dillon, able to get a top five. Lap down, battery on the track. Tim at T-Trip 14's lucky dog, Harvick, now 17 all-time win list. Another milestone in his book. Just hand him the championship. Well, I'd be okay with that. Lap down is me. Tim Tripp had a horrible weekend in fantasy and probably lost a few more spots. Eddie at 3Wide _ Fast Eddie's lucky dog for the MIS Mid-Ohio weekend is Keelan. He put on quite the show with his dad, especially with his own shower in victory lane. Lap down Joey Gase. He thinks he can knock Chastain out of the playoffs. Just not happening. LOL. Brandon at Brandon K. Carl's lucky dog goes to Allgaier for pulling off the win at Mid-Ohio. And Brandon's putting himself a lap down. I was at the casino all day Sunday. Didn't even pay any attention to the race. Then again, not sure any of the TVs would have had it on. Brandon, hope you won. Hope you brought home a couple dollars there. PETM podcast or PETM Racing Podcast, excuse me, at PETM Podcast, lucky dog, Keelan Harvick. Nice job by dad for letting him get the flag and ride the car to victory lane. Lap down the 66 for dropping a battery on the track. That was just incredible, guys. And I can't wait to come hang out with you guys in a couple weeks. It's going to be so much fun. But before we can go do that, I got to get to the messages on the Wave Around hotline. So let's get to the first one.
What's up, Brandon? It's Andrew as usual. First off, congrats on the win, man. It's awesome when you get to go to the track and see your favorite driver win. That happened to me once, 2007 at Pocono, but I wasn't there because it was rain shortened, so I was kind of pissed off about that. Anyway, kind of a typical Michigan race, I would say. A lot of early cautions that has happened for whatever reason since the repave, I've kind of noticed. I don't know. And then there's the long green flag run to kind of end the race there. So that's kind of what we got. Typical Michigan race. Not a horrible race, though. Harvick's got to be the lucky dog. I mean, him and Kyle Busch are dead even right now. If I had to pick one. I don't know which one I'd pick. Yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer, but they're definitely ahead of the 78 team for sure. They kind of struggled today. They got into a little incident, led some laps, and fell back, and never really recovered from there. So I don't know what happened there. I guess my lap down's got to be Austin Cindric for almost winning because he's Mick and I's favorite driver. I saw that. Those little interactions during the Xfinity race for sure. So thank God Allgaier won that race. Other lap down is Pepe Le Pew for eating my garbage yesterday. My driveway looked like the infield at MIS probably, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. And bar fights. Bar fights are also a lap down. Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Oh, Andrew never fails to disappoint. Andrew, thank you for calling in. Thanks. It was so awesome to be there. You're right. Seeing your driver win is incredible. And it's funny you mentioned what the infield at MIS looked like. Grant Anfinger mentioned that he couldn't figure out how crazy the MIS infield gets. And Ben Rhodes on the Friday show called MIS the Alabama of the North, which was awesome. So, yeah, it probably got a little messy in there. Not going to deny that one at all. Thanks for calling in, as always. Let's get to the second call on the Wave Around Hotline.
Hey, Brandon. It's Kathleen at KHI Fan. Wow, what a weekend. I am actually on my way home. It's Monday afternoon, and I'm motoring my way west around the bend to the house. But I had a great time. When I got back to the hotel last night on Sunday after the race, I was exhausted, but it was a good exhausted, because after a race weekend like that, if you're exhausted, you know you had a good time. It was great seeing you and Lindsay at the tweet up, and thank you for my koozie. I love it. And then after the race, I was able to meet up with another Harvick fan. He is on Twitter. I think his handle is GoKevGo4. His name is Rick. And I had never met him in person before. So he was at the race, and we met up and had a little bit of a celebration together. So that was pretty cool. Anyways, my lucky dog goes to none other than Keelan Harvick. How could you not be happy for that kid? Not only getting to go across the track and take that checkered flag, but hopping a shotgun with Dad and going for a little celebration ride. So that was so cool. They were saying on the radio that they didn't know if NASCAR was going to let him go down and do that. So I'm very happy that he got that chance. That's so once in a lifetime. You know, he'll never forget it. I don't really have a lap down kick. When I'm watching the race at the track, I usually have a tendency to focus on Kevin. Though, actually, I guess NASCAR or whoever was in charge of spotting debris and throwing a yellow for it, whoever didn't do that for whatever that turned out to be that the 13 car hit, that was pretty serious. And, you know, people were calling for it and they saw it there. And I don't know whether somebody didn't get the message or what, but that was pretty bad that that had to happen. Anyways, I had a great weekend. Again, it was nice to see you and Lindsay, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Oh, Kathleen, thanks so much for calling in. It was incredible seeing you guys at the tweet up. And yeah, you know, great experience for Keelan. He's old enough. He'll remember that. And definitely glad NASCAR was cool with that. And they should be. You know, it's dads and their kids. And that's what, you know, we build this sport around. You know, the Father Day weekend racing at MIS is celebrated. You know, bring your dads to the track. Bring your sons to the track. You know, whatever it is. So I'm glad that they weren't frowning upon that at all. All right, let's get to caller number three.
Hey, Brandon, it's Jeff Legg, Gray Wolf Pack 5 on Twitter. Haven't called in for a while, but on this eve of a wonderful Harvick weekend, I thought I'd call in. That was a great race. I really wish I could have been there, but family obligations kept me from being able to attend this one. My lucky dog, you know, NASCAR fans in general, we've seen some really good racing this year. And I know not everybody thinks that, but I sure do. I was very skeptical about the stage racing when they first came out with it. I thought that we were going to just have two throwaway mini races and then a smaller third race. What was I wrong? You know, we've got three go for it, all in, get everything you can get races that are important and matter. and there's no boring middle part. And I think that that has really enhanced my viewing pleasure of the races and probably a lot of other people. The lap down, it's got to be Joe Gibbs Racing. I kept on hearing them talking on the race coverage that Joe Gibbs was saying that this was going to be the tune-up race with all their best equipment to see how they stacked up against the competition. And if that was the case, that was an epic fail. I mean, they had bad strategies, bad pit calls, and it probably was pretty bad looking at Harvick's rear end for most of the race. So I'll make them my lap down. Not that they're not a great organization and not that they're not going to be some of the guys beat at the end. Kyle Busch can drive the doors off of anything, and Martin Truex can too. So it's going to be a fun dogfight. I can't wait for the playoffs to begin and see what happens. But I think we know what's going to happen. It's going to be that number four getting his second championship. See ya.
Hey, Jeff, thank you so much for calling in. Harvick Nation is showing up on the Wave Around Hotline today, which is awesome. Jeff, I want to hit on something. You mentioned the playoff points and the stage racing. You know, I think when that was first announced last year, everyone kind of scoffed at the stage win single playoff point and, oh, we're going to go out there for the wins. Martin Truex Jr. proved early on last year that those stage wins can prove valuable in the playoffs if you can rack them up, and they're going out there again doing it. I mentioned with Jeff Striegel a little bit ago, at this point last year, Truex had 15 stage wins. Harvick's at 12. Those stage wins matter. Those 12 points, that's like two race wins plus some. So they can add up. They matter. And I think everyone was proven wrong quickly that people were going to just ignore those stage wins. You got guys going out there and racing for those extra playoff points, especially when there's such a playoff point deficit. Any playoff point that can be earned is definitely critical and valuable. All right, we got one more call on the Wave Around Hotline. Let's get to it.
Hey, Brandon, it's John Warrington at Racing_64. Well, I had a terrific Saturday. Both my drivers won. Brett Moffitt, Justin Allgaier. Great races all around. And, boy, I couldn't have been happier on Saturday. I was hoping my guy, Landon Castle, could have completed the trifecta for me. I had my fingers crossed, but the hopes weren't very high with that 00 car. Michigan was cool to see the three car, what they did, but other than that, it was Harvick running away with it like he's done all season. For Lucky Dog, I'm going to give it to the three car for what they did, making that running along, taking the two tire stop, and basically they stole second place, but flat tire knocked them down to fifth there in the last couple laps. It was good to see them running good. For lap down, I'm going to go with Stuart Friesen's gas man for the extra little push that took him out of contention. I don't know if Friesen still had enough to win, but that sure took the wind out of his sails after that. So we'll go to Bristol, and usually we have some good racing there. Talk to you later.
Hey, John, thanks so much for calling in. Yeah, I am with you on Dylan. Like I said, I would not have penned him in at being the highest finishing Chevy. And like you said, probably should have had a second place, that flat tire there. And yeah, you know, truck series, typically some younger guys, pit road penalties can kill you. But they got one more race to go duel it out to see if someone can place spoiler to the top eight that are currently set right now. Like I mentioned, that's the only way anybody is going to make the truck playoffs. They've got to play spoiler ninth on back and go out there and win at Bristol. So this should be a very exciting Bristol truck race. Definitely looking forward to it. Thank you to everybody that tweeted and called the Wave Around Hotline. After the race, tweet me your picks. Call the Wave Around Hotline, 248-965-9538. It's a fun part of the show. Glad you guys are getting involved with that. All right. It is time for some fantasy talk. Don't forget, picks are due Thursday, 5 o'clock this week, because we've got a Thursday night truck race. So all picks are due by 5 o'clock on Thursday. DraftKings, I made a triumphant return, won a couple bucks, which was awesome. And over to the actual Lapped Traffic Fantasy League. 3 more weeks in segment 2. The potential was there this week to pick all 3 winners. Due to series regulars winning all 3 races. However, only had a couple guys picking 2 winners throughout the weekend, which was good. Week high was 158 points by John Entwistle, Jeff Legg, Tommy Witt, all taking Harvick, Allgaier, and Noah Gregson. 3 players picked Moffitt for the win, 8 players picked Allgaier for the win, and 11 took Harvick. Over to the top 10 in standings. In first place still is Chad Robb. He is running away with it with 12-16. Matt Fossum in second with 11-51. David James in third with 11-48. John Entwistle in fourth with 11-32. Kathleen McDonald, who we just heard from, in fifth with 11-18. Jeff Legg, who we also just heard from, in sixth with 11-08. Tim Triplett in seventh with 1100 even. Tommy Witt in eighth with 1092. Amanda Pugh in ninth with 1088. And Chris Lowther wraps out the top 10 with 1087. So it's Chad Robb and everybody else in the segment 2 standings here. Over to the cumulative standings. Chloe Yunker, she's in the lead, she's out of the lead, she's back in the league, and she has dropped and dropped big to third. Ouch, Chloe, what happened this weekend? In first is John Entwistle in first with 2485. In second, Tommy Witt, 2438. Chloe Yunker dropping to third with 2435. Chad Robb in fourth, 2422. And David James wraps up the cumulative top 5 with 2357. Like I said, only 3 more weeks left in segment 2. And we will reset it for the third segment to run with the playoffs there. My picks for MIS didn't do horrible. Johnny Sauter finished second. I had Elliott Sadler in the Xfinity Series finish sixth. And I had Mr. Kevin Harvick, who finished first. Unfortunately, though, the MOATF podcast is still holding a lead over me. They had a good week as well. I think they had second high points for this week. I got a couple weeks left to make something happen with those guys. That said, it's time for the picks. This weekend, we head to the last great Coliseum. We go night racing at Bristol. Kyle Busch won the spring race and is the defending August race winner as well. Does he sweep the season at Bristol, picking up his 7th win on the season too? Jimmy Johnson went 7 years without a win at Bristol, picking up the spring 2010 win and didn't win again until the spring of 2017. Can he pick up his first win of the season? It's crazy that we're talking the Bristol night race without a Jimmy Johnson victory. I have asked that a lot in my picks this segment because I'm still waiting. It's one of those things that I am shocked to see this season. Jimmy Johnson not in victory lane. Ford's last win at Bristol was back in 2015. Ford has been on a tear in 2018. Maybe Bad Brad picks up his first win of the season. And don't forget, Daniel Suarez said he is making the playoffs, and I think this could be the track he could potentially place. Spoiler 2, he's finished 2nd, 4th, and 11th the last 3 races. Could he or could someone else outside the top 16 get a win at Bristol? We will find out Saturday night. But now, it is time for my picks. Over to the Truck Series, I am going with Grant Enfinger. I'm thinking outside the box because I've got to beat the MOATF podcast. I'm going pretty typical in the Xfinity Series. Not Elliott Sadler, but Daniel Hemric. Why not? And over to the Cup race, Bad Brad gets it done at Bristol. That's who I've got. Who do you guys have? Don't forget to get your picks in by Thursday night. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, that is a wrap for episode 86 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. Make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, the Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, at Lap Traffic PC. Subscribe, download. Don't forget about the giveaway at 3,500 followers. Man, this was a fun show. Such a great way to wrap up the MIS season. The road to MIS, it is closed until next year. Can't thank MIS enough for their hospitality. Make sure you check out the bonus show and check out some awesome interviews from that on Friday. Big thanks to Jeff Stringle for coming on the show today from MRN Radio. It's such a great time talking with him. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Don't get caught chasing the lucky dog. Make sure you tune in each and every week to the Lap Traffic Podcast. See ya!